Hey, it's March 17th, 2017. This is Beginner's Puck, a podcast for hockey fans both old and new.
Oh, you switched that up. It's not both new and old. Now it's old and new. Wow.
I didn't know. I didn't know what I was doing.
We're diverse. Wow.
Yep. We shake things up.
That's true. We are like three podcasts in now. We can do this.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're three podcasts in talking about hockey. And oh my God, Deb, isn't hockey great?
No. Hockey's not great. This has been such a wackadoodle week in hockey. It's like hockey got together and went into the desert and started licking frogs. I mean, it has just been... things are topsy-turvies, up is down, left is right. I just don't know. But I think that's what happens when you get like towards the end of the season. Mm-hmm. It's the run up to the playoffs. Teams are falling apart. Teams are coming together. It was a crazy week. You had a good hockey week.
It was a great crazy week. I know. It's funny that, you know, our last episode, I came in just basically bitching and moaning about how terrible hockey is. And this week I'm like, all yay, because the Oilers won their last two games. And in each of those games, they scored seven goals. Seven.
What was it with sevens this past week? Like, how many teams had a 7-point game? Because I don't know. Like, the Toronto Maple Leafs lost to the Florida Panthers by, it was like 7-1 or something. And the Dallas Stars lost by a score of 7-something.
Oh, golly.
It just, like, yeah, it was like a really high scoring week for teams that were doing really well. And the teams that weren't were sort of being crushed under their boots or hockey boots or hockey skates.
Yeah, crushed under their
mangling,
skates.
Yeah, mangling that metaphor terribly.
Yeah, it was really fun to watch, just feeling
well
good.
If you're an Edmonton fan,
yeah.
Sure.
Well, I mean, even I have to admit that even the last night's game was against Boston, and Boston, you know, they acquitted themselves well. They got four goals, so it wasn't there wasn't a point for most of the game where I thought, okay, yeah, we've got this. Like, I for almost all the way through still had that thought that, okay, this is the Oilers, so Boston could come back and they could score a bunch of goals and they could win it. But eventually I relaxed toward the end of the third period and just enjoyed the heck out of it. And Patrick Maroon had a hat trick, which is scoring three goals in a game. He had a hat trick the last time they played Boston and scored two goals fairly quickly, fairly early in the evening. And boy, the team really, really wanted to get him that hat trick at home. Toward the end, they left him out on the ice just for minutes, which is a very long time in hockey. And
it's
everybody passed
time.
To him, trying to get the empty net goal for him at the end. It's just one of those things I love about hockey teams when they're just, you know, they're pulling together and they want to support each other. It's not all about me. It's helping the other guy. So that was a nice thing to see, even if he couldn't quite score because people kept getting in his way.
Yeah, we had that situation in a Flyers game a couple weeks ago where it looked like Wayne Simmonds had actually got a hat trick, but the puck actually didn't hit his stick. It looked like it was a deflection into the net, but it was actually Jake Voracek just got it straight. They reviewed it and looked at it, and they actually gave the point to Jake. But after everybody threw hats all over the ice, because it did look like Wayne Simmonds got the hat trick, and oh my gosh, the team bent over backwards just trying to get that third point, and I agree with you. I love when teams do that. Sadly, it didn't. So Jake Voracek ended up having to. He didn't have to, but he counted the number of hats that were thrown on the ice. He ended up purchasing that many Flyers hats and like donating them to the Children's Hospital or something.
So that's
he
so
felt
great.
Really badly. I know. It's like he felt so bad.
That's the thing with, you know, the review after the play or the coach's challenge and stuff. Like, you sometimes the excitement gets taken away after the fact. I mean, this was the case where they would have reviewed that goal anyway and taken it away from Wayne Simmonds just for accuracy's sake. But
yeah, there has been, and it's something maybe we should talk about for our new fans about this idea of the review, because that's kind of a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll actually, in some cases, the review will go up to Toronto. Is that correct?
Yep.
and it will be reviewed by, so it's not just the linesmen or mm-hmm. the officials sitting there looking at the looking at the replay. It's actually going to a room filled with hockey people up in Toronto, mm-hmm. and they pass down the decision, which is why sometimes those reviews tend to take a really long time. It's not just a bunch of referees, you know, trying to suss out what's going on mm-hmm. or what happened. It's a whole group of people. I did have to laugh, though. There was I think it was last week, there was some video that came out of a fan actually trying to hand the ref his glasses so he could make the call a little faster.
That's delightful.
I know. Sassy fans.
Yeah, that's something we should talk about sometime, talking about what can be reviewed, where it gets reviewed, because not everything's reviewed in Toronto,
and
how we feel about the existence or not of those reviews, because there's some controversy, and I think that would be interesting to go into. So let's add that to the list.
Add it to the spreadsheet, yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, we've had some really good suggestions by some of our listeners and people on Twitter for future hockey episodes. So I think, you know, it's kind of early in the podcast to plug this, but and we'll certainly, you know, make sure we put it in our credits as well. But if you ever have anything that you are curious about or that you feel that would be helpful to a new fan, or perhaps you yourself would like to know more about, reach out to us, because it may be something that, sure, we can answer really quickly, but it may be something that we have to look into, which I don't know about you, but I really love research. So
she does, people.
I really do. So I'm accumulating quite a hockey library as we speak. Of books and texts and plays and things. So I would love to figure this out. Or we could always ask your husband, who's sort of a hockey savant.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I do all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He's handy for that.
Yeah, he really is. It's good to have the Encyclopedia Brown kind mm-hmm. of person around that you can ask things to.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, there's something else exciting that happened this week. The U.S. women's national team.
Yeah.
Drew a line in the sand and said, we are not going to play in Worlds this year, which U.S. hockey is actually hosting in Michigan. Mm-hmm. This is really a developing situation. So by the time that people listen to this, there may be some things that have happened. I don't know, because they seem to be at sort of a standstill. So maybe we can give a little bit of background because it's been all over the hockey world. The NHL is talking about it, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, you know, Sports Network. It's something that has transcended, sort of the circles of lady hockey, that yeah. this kind of news tends to be ghettoized, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I'll be the first to admit that I don't follow a lot of women's hockey because it's not that accessible.
Yep. I will
not
second,
out of lack of interest.
I will,
yeah.
I'll be the second to admit that I don't follow a lot of women's hockey. And it is for exactly that reason. Not only is news about women's hockey sort of ghettoized, but women's hockey itself is. It's very difficult, even in Canada. And I think in Canada, we probably have an easier time finding women's hockey to watch. So I have watched some on the TV, mm-hmm. which is nice, you know, on a cable channel, but it doesn't happen all that often, at least not when I'm available to watch it. And yeah, I think in the States it's probably even harder to find. So there is many people make the argument that men's hockey makes a lot more money for organizations, and you know what? Did they when they first got started? No, you supported them and promoted them and made that hockey accessible to people to try to get more people interested in it. And that is not something that I've ever witnessed happening with women's hockey the way that it usually does with men's hockey when a new league starts up. So
yeah, and you know, we especially this year we have an expansion league. We have a brand new hockey team starting, and there has been a lot of press about this. There's been a lot of promotion. There's been a tremendous amount of buzz around this, and I can honestly say, and I have the NHL Network on cable. I subscribe to the NHL package. Obviously, I have never seen women's hockey on television. I have seen NCAA hockey. I have seen AHL hockey on television, but I have never seen women's hockey. And it's not, I'm not scrolling through the guide every day looking mm-hmm. for hockey, but if it's there, it hasn't been easily accessible, and it's not something that's kind of popped up. But you know, to talk a little bit first, have you read any of the many, many articles that have come out to determine what exactly it is that they're sort of taking a stand against, or taking a stand for, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for. I've read a couple, and one of them didn't go into super great details, but did kind of a nice job of breaking down a lot of the inequities that happen between, and not just between women's hockey and men's hockey, but in between like women's hockey and you know, younger boys hockey and junior hockey and things that, like, you know, the younger than 18 teams get much, much better treatment than the women's team does. And the women's team is the one that is bringing home gold and occasionally silver, but bringing home medals every single time. They are the darlings of the United States Winter Olympic team. It's mind-boggling that they get so little support, despite the fact that right. they bring in more success than pretty much anybody else.
Yeah, and I think that has been such a huge misconception that people are saying, well, first of all, there's been a lot of rumblings on Twitter by a bunch of really ignorant people, honestly, and I don't mean ignorant mm-hmm. as in unpleasant, just like stupid ignorant, that, you know, well, what do they expect? You know, they're not going to make the same amount of money as NHL players. And that is absolutely not what they are looking for.
I mean,
because the women's national team, while it's made up of members of the Women's Hockey League, which has a host of its own issues and ended up having to, you know, make their players take a pay cut this year. That is not what they're looking for. What they're looking for primarily is development, the same sort of equity and development that the boys seem to get. And I think one of the figures I saw tossed around is like $3 million plus per year is spent on developing boys hockey. And that doesn't happen. They get like 60 games a year. And I think the women's teams get like nine, you know, so yeah, they get nine. So they don't even have that. There's no promotion for women's hockey at all. There's been a tremendous amount of even disrespect for the Olympic. When the teams are announced, new jerseys are announced, like women haven't been invited to the jersey unveilings. It's just the men's team. And like you said, the women's team is incredibly successful. And they're just, they talk about the pay inequity in that when you have a man's, one of the men from the NHL going to the Olympics, I mean, you're talking to somebody who's making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, who, you know, takes a couple weeks off and goes to the Olympics. But the requirements for the women Olympians are a little bit more stringent in that they have to be centralized. They have to be available for training for like up to a year ahead of time, which means they may have to relocate. And they're not coming into this with the same resources as an NHL player. So they're not, they don't have that financial, I think the top player in the women's league is, you know, making maybe well under $100,000. Mm-hmm. So they're making a huge financial sacrifice. And I know there was a statement that came out from the U.S. Hockey saying, well, our women members can make $85,000 a year. You know, this is what their potential is. And it was incredibly dishonest because many of the players came back and said, well, we make $1,000 a month for the 6 months during an Olympic year. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And then they can make bonuses, which are provided by the U.S. or the Olympic Committee, not USA Hockey, but the Olympic mm-hmm. Committee. If they win gold, they then get further bonuses. And there was a really great interview by Hillary Knight, who's talking about having to relocate to Boston to train and just not having enough money at the grocery store, like to even live in Boston. And her mother saying, you're going to have to get another job. And her saying, like, you don't understand the how hard this is and how much time you have to put into it. I mean, can you imagine telling somebody in the NHL, like, well, sure, you can play hockey, but you also have to be something else.
Yeah. You know? You have to be a bag boy at the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's a matter of equity in a lot of different ways. And I think even more so, they're so committed to making things better for girls coming up through the program. Mm-hmm.
That is the thing that just sort of gets me in the heart. Like they are athletes who love what they're doing. So the idea yes. that they have chosen to give up the ability to do it in a, you know, international competition is so huge. The idea that they would not do that, and it is not just for themselves. This is not a selfish move in any way, shape, or form. This is them, you know, taking a stand for all the women that have had to deal with so much crap over the years, and for the little girls who are growing up and learning that they want to play hockey. They should not have to go into a situation like these women are currently in, and I am really impressed that these women are standing up for themselves and for the little girls of the future.
Yeah, and it's very, very frustrating as, you know, I am a mom. I have 4 children. I have 2 boys and 2 girls, and all of my children have been involved in youth sports. And one of the arguments that I kept seeing after this came out from, you know, this ignorant people on Twitter, was that, well, nobody watches women's hockey anyway. It really just doesn't matter. And I can tell you, as a parent of somebody who has had children involved in youth sports from T-ball, and we have played baseball, we have played softball, we have played basketball, we have played volleyball, we have played lacrosse. It starts so early. And there is a hierarchy of what is important in youth sports. And at the, you know, at the very young level, the very, like the T-ball level, everything's equal, everything's great, but very, very, very quickly, or even in, you know, rec league basketball, but very, very quickly, it becomes apparent that there is a hierarchy, and the hierarchy usually involves there's varsity boys, there's junior varsity boys, then it's varsity girls and junior varsity girls. And the girls' teams don't get the attention. They don't get the resources. They don't get the good court times. They don't get the good field times. They don't get, they're taught from a very young age that they are lesser. And the parents absorb that this isn't as important. And it's infuriating because you are not paying any less to have your child participate in sports. If they're a boy or a girl, you're paying the exact same amount of money. Wow. But this internalized message that, well, nobody's really interested in girls' sports anyway. Everybody's focused on the boys' sports. It just carries through, and it carries through to the high school level, and it carries through to the college level, till you get to the pro sports, and you just have this, well, nobody pays any attention to it anyway because it's not important. And that is such a false statement. It's not important because we have made it not important, that we have made this thing to be lesser. And I keep thinking about, you know, everybody has been to, well, a lot of people, I'm not saying everybody who's listening has been to a professional hockey game, but if you have been, chances are at some point during an intermission, you have seen the little mites come out and play hockey. And there's little girls out there playing just as well. And those little girls don't have the same opportunity as the boy that they are skating next to. Yep. And that is with the U.S. national team, who are amazingly world-class athletes who are risking everything because they want to have the same equipment as the men's team. You know, they want to have the same opportunity to succeed. They want their people in Michigan didn't even know the worlds were happening in Michigan because it just is not, it's not advertised. They don't get the press. So I am in high dungeon about this, I got to tell you.
Well, with good reason. This is a big deal, and I think this is something really, really important for the sports world. And I think that the way that this falls out is going to have lasting repercussions on women's sports in probably all different arenas in the future. And I really hope that things go the way that they really ought to. And I look forward to seeing how it all shakes out down the road.
Right. And, there have been a few members, a few NHL players who are members of the men's team, played in the Olympics, you know, who came out and said, they're hardworking athletes. They deserve some support. Not as many as I had hoped would, but the optics of this are not good on USA Hockey. And I think I have seen very little negative comments from the professional sports world about this. I mean, everybody seems to be like, this is a ballsy move, and it's time for some changes. There has been, you know, from the sports fan community, it's been a little bit more mixed, but I think on a professional level, there's been a lot of support for some changes. So all those little girls out there during the timeouts who are playing the little mites games at professional games, hopefully by the time you get to be old enough to play in a developmental league, you know, things might be a little bit better. Keep your fingers crossed.
Yep.
Yeah. So let's end this segment on a more positive note. This is Tripod Month, and we actually had a suggestion on Twitter about a hockey podcast that we listen to. We've had a couple people ask us this, actually. So, Erica, do you want to recommend a few hockey podcasts for Tripod Month? And
sure.
Tripod is not Tripod, T-R-I-P-O-D. It is hashtag T-R-Y-P-O-D. So if you go online on Twitter and pop in that hashtag, you will get all sorts of podcast recommendations. But we're going to give you some specific hockey recommendations.
Yes, I only listen to a couple hockey podcasts at this point. I'm my time is limited, but I'm slowly sort of growing that field right now. Last episode, I mentioned Hockey Feels, which is the podcast that I listen to as soon as it drops every time, and I will absolutely admit my bias. My spouse, Stephen, is one of the two co-hosts of that podcast, and our friend Rachel is the other co-host of that podcast. I love it because they talk about hockey from a very sort of relaxed viewpoint and are not afraid to show how much they love it for both the serious and the silly reasons. And Rachel has a cat that sometimes meows into the microphone and it delights me to no end. So yes, if you like those sorts of things, I highly recommend Hockey Feels. And the other one that I do listen to regularly is TSN's Bobcast with Bob McKenzie. And it's only every other week, so it's not as big a time commitment as some podcasts. And usually I refuse to listen to podcasts that have only a single person just talking into the microphone because for me that usually gets boring. But in this case, I don't know, it doesn't bother me because for one thing, he's answering questions. So he'll read off a question from a listener and then he'll go into detail about it. So I feel like it's just sort of an interview format where the interview is the interviewer is us and written questions. And then he will also, in addition to talking about hockey, which he knows a lot about, he will go into non-hockey related areas. He will give you recipes for great margaritas or chicken wings, recommend what kind of wine to buy, or just tell you crazy stories about what it was like covering hockey, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And he knows some great stories and lots of people. And it's delightful. I like it.
Yeah, it's kind of, we said this on our members Slack channel that, you know, it's like listen to your favorite uncle tell you hockey stories from back in the day.
Yeah.
But, and if you follow him on Twitter, he also, because he covers junior hockey.
Yes.
For TSN. So he has a lot of really interesting hockey tidbits about stuff that doesn't get covered, at least here in the States. I mean, let's face it, hockey doesn't get covered a lot in the States, period. But if you're interested in junior hockey, like he's got some really good insights on that. So, yeah, Uncle Bob McKenzie.
Love him.
Good stuff.
Love him. What do you listen to, Deb?
I listen to so many podcasts. It's really difficult to it's really difficult to narrow them down. I was listening to the big ones, you know, ESPN and Sports, you know, Hockey Central. I really do like Marek Wiwyszynski. I know that's one that doesn't need any kind of a plug, just because it's very insidery baseball. It does assume a certain level of hockey knowledge. I know I have learned a lot from listening to them, but it's a little bit more lighthearted and fun, which, you know, I kind of enjoy that not so serious sportsing. But I have really made an effort lately to add some more women podcasters talking about hockey. So Shut Your Five Hole is one that I just find delightful. It is super silly and fannish about hockey in ways that I think their last episode, they talked a lot about Quidditch. But it's short, it's ridiculously funny and just fun. So if you're looking for that kind of outlet, I did just start listening this week to Don't Snow the Goalie, which is a hockey podcast by women, and it tends to focus on women's sports and particularly women's hockey. So that has been really illuminating this week because, you know, like we talked about earlier in the segment, early in the podcast, the U.S. women's national team and their struggle for recognition and more equitable treatment by USA Hockey. So it's been fun to get like that perspective and to focus a little bit more on that, which is something, as I admitted, I am woefully ignorant about much of the U.S. Women's Hockey League. So, yeah, those are my recommendations. And I'm sure we'll probably have more as time goes on, because like I said, I love hockey podcasts. I'm always willing to try something new. And women in hockey podcasting, I have found, tend to be more team oriented. So there'll be, you know, women talking about a specific team, which is great. And I think at some point we'll probably focus, we'll talk about those a little bit more. But for general podcasts, I think those are some good recommendations.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. All right. So what do you think? Let's learn something new about hockey.
Okay. Now it's time for What the Puck. Those little things that everybody knows, but we all had to learn them sometime.
Well, Erica, I think this is a good week to talk about the way the NHL is organized, because everybody keeps talking, if you're watching any hockey this year, everybody is talking about the run to the playoffs, the run up to the playoffs, what they need to do to get the points, to get the wild card standing, and what the heck does all of that mean? So, we have a league, right? Mm-hmm. The National Hockey League. And how many teams are in the National Hockey League?
Currently, there are 30 teams in the NHL. Next year, that changes to 31, as Deb alluded to earlier, but we're not going to get into that now.
We're going to have a whole episode dedicated to the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Actually, it's the Vegas Golden Knights.
Vegas
the
Golden
loss
Knights.
Off.
Nope.
It's the Vegas Golden Knights.
They lost the loss.
They lost the loss. They... That is so ridiculous. Yes, they became a fully franchised team as of beginning of March. They paid their final installment and are now allowed to do hockey business. So, yeah, they will be. There'll be 31 teams, actually. Right now, there is 30. And there are two divisions.
Conferences,
right. I'm jumping ahead of myself. There's two conferences. We basically divided North America in half. Mm-hmm. So there's an Eastern Conference and a Western Conference.
Yep.
Which is interesting because, like, Detroit is Eastern, but Chicago is Western.
Yeah, some of those ones in the middle are kind of
gerrymandered.
Yeah, well, kind of. And I mean, and some of them have actually changed. So over the years, depending on when they came into the league, they may have started out in the Eastern Conference and then were able to join the Western Conference when there were more Western teams added. Basically, they're just trying to keep the numbers roughly equal in between, so that you have, you know, you don't have a ton more teams in the Eastern Conference than you do in the Western Conference.
Right. And when we start talking about, like, we're going to have a segment later in our podcasting career talking about old hockey, which I like to, like, hockey history. And we'll talk about how all of these conferences and divisions, everything have changed over the years, because this is not a stagnant thing. This is what it is today.
Okay.
All right. So there's two conferences, an Eastern and Western, and then there are two divisions within each conference. So in the Eastern Conference, you have the Metropolitan Division and the Atlantic Division. And there's eight teams in the Metropolitan and eight teams in the Atlantic. And there are seven teams in the Central and seven teams in the Pacific. So it's not exactly even. It's even-ish.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's what happens when you divide things in half.
Yeah. And also, I mean, when you think about how this continent was populated, it was largely from east to west. So just population wise, it gets, you know, thinner and thinner the farther you go west up to a certain point. And it's the same thing with hockey teams. There are a lot more hockey teams out on the East Coast than there are out west. They're spread farther. So,
right.
Which is why I, as a hockey fan, at learning about this stuff, I was fairly quickly able to remember which teams were in the Pacific Division and which teams were in the Central Division over in the Western Conference. But when it came to the Eastern Conference, I still have trouble remembering which teams are in the Metropolitan Division, also known as the Met, and which teams are in Atlantic. There are some that I can remember, but since geographically, I feel like in my head, like, they're all just kind of bunched up, I still have trouble with that. So don't feel bad if you're not catching on right away.
Yeah, don't think Metropolitan and Atlantic has, like, any kind of geographic sort of. Yeah, because, like I said, it's kind of very gerrymandered. So now we have four different divisions. So everybody's following us so far. So we've gone from 30 to 2 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is they count points. Every time a team wins, they get 2 points. If they tie, they get 1 point. And if they win in the shootout, they get another point.
Mm-hmm. Or overtime.
Or overtime, right. If overtime, nobody wins in overtime, they go to a shootout and you get another point. So that's how they calculate all these points. So what they do is they take the top three teams from each division. Mm-hmm. I'm pulling up the Wirecard, and I am on the NHL website right now, which does all this very handily. So the top three teams from each division will be in the playoffs. Yep. And then they take the next two teams in the point standings from the entire conference. I'm sorry, the entire conference, who have the next highest number of points, and they are called the wild cards. So they are, you know, they're the ones that get a shot. Yep. They're not necessarily in the top six, but they get a shot. Mm-hmm. And this is why everybody is like scrambling for points this time of year, because some of these races are incredibly close. And right now we've had a division, the Metropolitan Division has been incredibly hot. So they are working, like their points are crazy compared to, say, the Central Division.
Mm-hmm. Poor Central Division.
Yeah. Central Division is kind of struggling.
To illustrate that, the Washington Capitals are currently at the top of the Metropolitan Division, and actually at the top of the entire Eastern Conference with 98 mm-hmm. points. If right. you look over in the Western Conference at, say, the highest team in the Pacific, you know, it's not that far down. It's 91. But if you look at the wild card teams, the highest wild card team in the Eastern Conference has 90 points. The highest wild card team in the Western Conference has 82, which is a pretty big gap.
It's a pretty big gap. But even looking at, you know, Washington Capitals on 98 points at the top of the Metropolitan Division, the top of the Atlantic Division, which is the Montreal Canadiens, only has 86 points.
Yeah.
So they are, you know, 12 points behind the leader of the Metropolitan Division. So mm-hmm. even though they're the top of their own division. So it's crazy that the Metropolitan has been stupidly hot, which has not been good for the Flyers, because pretty hard and pretty fast, just because everybody was so, so good this year. Mm-hmm. So when people are talking about divisions and conferences and the wild card position, that's kind of how all this is set out. So everybody is really struggling to get their wild card. Like right now, Toronto is sitting at the bottom of the Eastern Conference with 78 points in the bottom wild card slot. But you've got New York Islanders with 77 and Tampa Bay with 77. So all it's going to take is one game and that bottom spot's going to flip. There's mm-hmm. a pretty comfortable lead between the New York Rangers with 90. I think they're pretty solidly in that wild card spot, if not even going to be able to jump into a playoff position, depending on how things go the end of the year.
I have suffered a bit from the nerves myself just over the last week, because, you know, last time we recorded, I was all upset about hockey because the Oilers had lost a few games. Luckily, they have now come and won a few games, which is fantastic, because there are two NHL teams in the province of Alberta, my Edmonton Oilers and the dreaded Calgary Flames, who actually, they have a pretty nice fan base. If I didn't live in Edmonton, I would have no hatred against Calgary, but they're division rivals, so grr. Anyway, Calgary, for the first time in many, many weeks, for a while, had actually popped up into the third spot in the Pacific Division, which was scary for us, because then we were only in a wild card slot. Because we have won handily 2 7-point games, woo, we are now back up there. But we, in third place, we have 83 points. Calgary has 82 points. So really, mm-hmm. every single game between now and the end of the season is going to be crucially important, especially because the Anaheim Ducks have 84 points in second place. I mean, it's right. so tight that it's scramble time for people who are hoping that their team is going to make it.
Right. And St. Louis has 79. That's like, you know, two games out of... Mm-hmm.
That's just underneath.
It's 3 points away from being in the playoff spot. So, yeah, that's the kind of thing that's making people crazy right now. So mm-hmm. there's no room for losing a game this close to the end of the season.
Yep.
Because everything is so tight, everything is so close, and every point could mean the difference between you're in or, you know, you get no games at the end of April.
It's kind of like if you watch, you know, a cooking competition reality show or something like a fashion competition reality show, any of those things. Once you get kind of toward the end and all of the weaker contestants have been knocked off, you're at the point where just three too many grains of salt on your quiche is going to send you home. And same thing here. Just, you know, one game missed and boom, you're out of the running.
Yep. Mm-hmm. As I well know after watching this last week's Flyers game. We're done. I think we're done. But Aww. Yeah, so that's some great hockey knowledge right there. So hopefully you'll feel a little bit more informed about what everybody's ranting and raving about with these points and wild cards and playoff positions. So, and we'll definitely be talking more about the structure of the playoffs as we get closer to the playoffs, because that's kind of interesting too, how that all plays out and the way hockey is different from other sports.
Yep.
So
it's pretty cool. Let's end on a happier note though than thinking about your poor Flyers.
Yeah. Let's talk about a team that's worse than the Flyers. Because last week
right.
Last week you mentioned a fun little hockey tidbit. So I decided I was going to come up with a fun little hockey tidbit as well. And this is something, you know, every team has its own culture and every team has its own way of expressing its individuality. And I love that. And it's, oh my gosh, we have, you know, teams have great social media accounts. Dallas Stars have an amazing Jumbotron operator who someday I want to meet and like buy them mini drinks because I think they're the most amazing person in hockey right now.
Yeah, me too.
But I want to talk about the Colorado Avalanche. And I actually have in my notes, bless their hearts, right after that, because Colorado, they're just the worst team in the entire league right now. To give you some perspective, we talked about the Washington Capitals having 98 points. Colorado has 43.
The next bad team is 61. Like that's the gap between the last and the second to last.
Yeah. So they have played 69 games. They have won 20 of those and they've lost 46. So Ouch. They're not good. But you know something? They're plucky. They have good social media accounts. They try to keep their chins up. But they have a little funny thing that they do. And it just delights me every time I see it and hear it. And I'm actually going to put a video of this in the show notes. So when a team gets a penalty, the person who drew the penalty, who actually had the penalty, committed the penalty, has to go sit in the penalty box. And depending on what they did and severity of the penalty, you know, it's usually 2 minutes. It's typical, like for the minor things, slashing and tripping and hooking and all that good stuff. You know, they will have to go sit in the penalty box for 2 minutes. And the Colorado Avalanche, this cute little thing is when their player comes out of the penalty box, they actually play the mushroom sound effect from Super Mario. So the player will come
sound effect.
Yes, the one-up sound. So the player will come popping out of the penalty box to get back into the game, and you'll get this little sound effect. And it's just, it's so funny, and it just makes me smile every time. It doesn't make any difference that player's back out on the ice, honestly, because they're just that bad. But at this point, it's good that they have fun. Mm-hmm. They're good hockey players. Like, they're just good boys. And they just can't get it together. So.
That's a great tidbit, Deb, because I love that, too. Nice work. Good pick.
I think so. It's one of those things that just makes you smile. And if you can't smile about hockey,
what can you
smile about? That's right. So you have been listening to Beginner's Puck. And remember, hockey is for everyone, especially you. Beginner's Puck is a Castrier production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter at Beginner's Puck, email us at beginnerspuck@gmail.com, or leave a comment at theincomparable.com/puck. I'm not singing the Hockey is Dumb song this week because you'll just be on the podcast.
That's fine. I'll just be sad.
I don't know that anybody noticed, but Yeah. Hockey is pretty dumb.
Only the coolest kids listen till the very, very end.
This is true. It's the podcast shawarma.
All right. Well, we can do our few seconds of silence, and I will count us in. 3, 2, 1. Did you hear me?
I did, but you're doing the cold intro. I was waiting for that penny to drop. You're not used to that, are you?
It never did. Well, let me take a sip of water here.